Hi, this is Jeff Seymour, and welcome to the podcast. Today, I'm going to answer some listeners' questions and hopefully come up with good answers, and it will hopefully lead me to some interesting and useful discussion. Fingers crossed. Let's see how it goes. I'll explain. Okay, so the first question that I was asked, or that I'm going to answer, has to do with preparing for an audition. Emmanuel asked me this question, saying he wondered what my thoughts were on if you know, how you prepare for an audition. He seems to get satisfaction from working with his friends, and that wasn't typically how most actors prepare for auditions. He thought that perhaps they just prepared individually, and so he's got the group, and he wonders group, individual, and are there clear pros and cons? And so here's the answer, Emmanuel. It's whatever works. It's whatever you get satisfaction from. It's whatever you make progress with. It's whatever works. That's it. That's the bottom line. It doesn't really matter. I mean, I can give you pros and cons for each one. I could give you pros and cons for working alone and pros and cons for working with people. But they're always going to line up in the same categories. You know, it's going to be, does this work? Do you feel comfortable? Is it giving you an advantage? Are you more confident when you walk in the room? Is the stuff clear for you? Do you, you know, are you on your lines better? Do you understand the material more? That's it. I mean, you know, the one big con that I find with working by yourself, and I've done a lot of that certainly on my own, getting things ready, maybe I don't have someone around, is really just for me the running lines aspect. Because try as you might to get as comfortable as you can with the idea that you're going to be, you know, I'm listening in my head to the other person speaking. Sometimes I'll even say their line out loud, you know, so that I can hear it. It is slightly different when you go into the room and, you know, you start hearing those lines coming at you. And even though you may be very comfortable with just reacting as you hear it, it's, I find that might be a con for me. So I usually like someone to run the lines so that I can hear them out loud coming at me before I walk into a room. The thing about working with groups, Emmanuel, is that it's just contingent on the group you have. I mean, you know, sometimes a problem with groups of people is that you will get so many different ideas coming at you, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen kind of thing. And someone might say, well, I think that's funny. Someone else says, I don't think it's funny at all. And, you know, you're torn. And since it's tricky enough as an actor to, you know, just be able to trust a choice you're going to make and go in. You know, okay, I'm going to do it this way. Is this what they're looking for? And, you know, we go around and around and worry, you know, am I going to pick the right one? Well, obviously, if you have a bunch of people standing around, you know, what are we doing then? Just taking majority vote? Hey, maybe that's the way to go. But all that matters is that when you walk into the room, you feel confident. So whatever that process is, that's it. What's tricky is trying to find what you base it on. And here's what I would say the number one thing you base it on, as far as whether the method you're using, the way that you're preparing is successful for you, is first and foremost, do you feel more confident when you walk in the room? Are you clearer on the material? Are you prepared more in the sense you know your lines clearly, you understand it, you know, maybe whatever the system is you use, you've gone over what I think certainly in the real life actor approach is important, really understanding material, you know, the human aspects of it, never the acting. Never, ever, ever the acting. Always the human aspects, what the problem is, what you're talking about, what's important to you, you know, the things a human would have. For me, as long as you know those things, if the process that you have is shedding light on those things, making sure that you have those T's crossed and those I's dotted, then I would say that's really good for you. You can't put it so much on whether or not you're booking, because that's a whole different lottery that's going on. You know, you could be the most fabulous actor in the world, but if they can't use a redhead or a tall person or short person or whatever the million gillion reasons are that they can't use you as they're trying to figure out that puzzle of the casting and how they're going to cast their particular show, those things you can't control at all. And so you just might be in a system where it takes a while before your great talent and ability in the room lines up with a part that's actually really kind of the perfect thing they should cast you in. Sometimes it can take years before all of those planets line up. So how do we know? First of all, we know by how we feel. Even when we're going up to the audition place, you know, are we more excited than afraid? Are those butterflies we're feeling actually clearly understood as excitement? Do we feel we know our material, okay? How we conduct ourselves in the room, you know, is it with aplomb? Do the people seem to like what we do? Are we able to get through it one time and do it, lay it down and leave the room like we have other places to go? If that process is getting you to do that, that's the number one sign for me. The number two sign is feedback. Are you hearing nice things? Not that we always get feedback, but when you do, if your agent asks for it, if the casting director just happens to make a comment, you know, is it good? Do they say things like, well prepared, you know, they really knew what they were doing, really liked their talent, blah, blah, blah. Well, there you go. Then it's working. Then it's working. So you could, you know, at least assume that you're doing the right thing, whatever that is. The thing you need to be wary of is if when you're in a group of people, the consensus is choices, remedy, that you're never comfortable with. You know, you're willing to default to whatever they're saying because after all, it's two or three or five people watching you and they're saying, no, 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 it's better when you do this. And then you do it and it doesn't feel right. And even in the midst of it not feeling right, they're all chortling and saying, no, it's really great. Well, you know, you can trust that once or twice, I suppose, going into an audition. But if it doesn't click in the room, if you feel uncomfortable, something's amiss. At the end of the day, I think it's important for the actor to acquire the ability to really understand, you know, what they're doing to the point that they can kind of tell whether they're in or out or they're making their points or not. Because certainly with the real life actor approach, and since I'm always turning to the book of life, I could say after having been in a meeting or a discussion or, you know, an argument, a negotiation in real life, that afterwards, if you said to me, hey, how do you think it went, Jeff? Well, I could certainly tell you with certainty whether I was present and there and I made my points and I feel that I persuaded and all sorts of other things. I might not be able to accurately tell you whether or not the people liked me, but I'm certainly never confused as to whether or not I was present and there and I know I made my points. And so you see, the closer we get to life, which is what this whole approach is about, the more we can draw from it, the closer we can get that distance between the two, the more in charge and aware in a way that I think is really conducive to being able to do good work. I think that you should be able to get to a point where, you know, it's not confusing for you to be able to ascertain whether or not you felt good, present, clear when you gave your audition. Reading people and deciding whether or not, you know, you're going to get picked, it's just let that go. I mean, you can certainly leave the room and say, hey, I think they like me. That's great. There's no harm in that. But, you know, they could fall over themselves. They could say stuff basically like, you know, almost it is your role. But between that moment and the moment on set, there's a lot of other people that get involved that could just put the kibosh on it that they could have never anticipated. So the best thing to do is just focus on how you're feeling. And so, Emmanuel, whatever you do, if it makes you feel groovy, keep doing it, brother. And just focus on how it makes you feel. And then second, are you getting good feedback? And then certainly thirdly, are you booking? Which is always the best litmus test. But not the needed one, certainly, because, you know, jobs sometimes are a slippery little fish and they're hard to catch. All right, that's the answer to the first question. Thank you for that, Emmanuel. All right, the next question is from Jonathan. Jonathan, you're asking me about your agent, and you're saying that you had a gig that was your first job. And I know because, of course, we discussed it, and I gave you some aid, and I'm glad it worked out. And also with, you know, how to communicate with your agent prior to that moment. So you communicated with your agent. You got a lot of things out there. You guys seemed to strike up a nice communication together, and you guys got on and made your points. And lo and behold, the next day you had an audition, and then you ended up getting that job. And so now, of course, you're trying to be patient. You're trying to sit on your hands. You say in your email, you don't want to come off like some entitled actor, and I appreciate everything you're saying, but you still feel frustrated because, well, you went in, you had that great discussion, then you got that job, and of course, actors think, okay, here we go. Let's, you know, send me out on another. Maybe I'm going to do the same thing, and we're just going to get this train a-rolling. This is always the tricky one, you know, because how do you ascertain properly what effort your agent's making? I mean, how do you know what's going on behind the curtain? It's tricky. You know, you don't want to lean on your agent and maybe piss them off because maybe they're working hard. You don't know what's in your agent's control and are they controlling it? You don't know what's out of your agent's control and how that's going, what the perception of you is. This is, you see, these things right here, of course, are what make this business just so lousy and unfun because, of course, this is the hurly-burly of it. That's just, it's just so hard to navigate. But you can navigate it. Because, of course, you can just look at it like a business and you can start to make a list of, you know, what it is that's going on, what your options are, and, you know, what you can do about it. So let's look at it. Your question is, really, if you've gone out like only four times you feel and, you know, maybe you even done your research and found out that guys in your thing, you know, can go out way more. There's a lot of jobs for people like you because sometimes that does it, right? You could be a type that just there's not a lot happening in your particular market for your thing. And for other types, there's tons. They're always looking for these people. I mean, that's one factor. The other factor is, of course, you know, how powerful your agent is, how many people they have that look like you, and how the casting directors see you. You know, recently I heard a story about a guy who was just so bothered by the fact that he wasn't going out enough. He finally went in and did the right thing. It's always the right thing. He went in and had a nice, calm discussion with his agent. And apparently his agent printed up a thing showing that over that past year or whatever, there had been 400 submissions on his behalf from them to all the casting people. And the casting people chose just not to see this fellow. It's their prerogative. They don't need to see the person if they don't want to see the person. So there you go. You see the actors thinking, oh my goodness, I'm not going out at all. I'm going to go in and talk. Let's see what happens. And you find out that no, in fact, your agency has sent you out that picture out on your behalf 400 different times. Jeez. What does that mean? Well, it means that when the casting director, and again, you know, I've said it and I'm going to keep saying it, you've got to treat yourself, you've got to stand outside yourself and be your own CEO. So if the CEO gets this information, what does the CEO do? Well, you just kind of draw it back. You look at the picture, first of all, first things first. They're looking at thumbnails. Remember, these are modern days, so they're just seeing thumbnails, little pictures. I suppose they can punch the key and blow it up if they want, but they tend to look at little, you know, walls of pictures trying to decide who's going to be what. Do I see a face of the person that pops out that I feel is going to be that character? And you just kind of go down. There's just so many people. Folks, keep remembering, there's just so many people. There's so many people trying to get into the party. So, you know, you can't spend minutes looking at each person's face. You're just looking at wallpapers of faces, thumbnails, and they're going along and looking at it. Now, first thing I'd think, if someone said 400, I think, you know, I don't think that picture's working for you. It's obviously not popping right. That's the first thing I'd go to, because what we don't want to say is, look, you just don't have a face for this business. Maybe one for the radio, but not for this show business. Get out. No, the first thing you want to think is, okay, are we taking our best foot forward? So the first thing I do is really take a look at that picture, because that's what they're seeing. You know, I have a series of podcasts coming up. They're quite nice, quite delightful. One coming up is with Jenna Fischer, who I'm sure you all know as Pam in The Office. She has a book that is coming out, so we'll be releasing that podcast with the release date of the book, which is coming up soon. But it's called The Actor's Life. And Jenna Fischer's people contacted me and said that, you know, I guess it would be a good fit to be on this particular podcast. And so while I was in L.A., I met with Jenna, and we had a lovely podcast. I'm very excited about it. I think you're going to get a lot out of it, because she has written this book called The Actor's Life. And it's about an actor's journey. And I read it. I thought it was fantastic, but there'll be more on that later. So this is just a teaser for that podcast coming up. But I will bring up as a bit of information that she so expertly puts in her book, and it has to do with photographs. And I want to make a quick comment on the fact that she uses the picture that she had at the time that she submitted for the part of Pam. And as you'll see in her book, the picture perfectly gives you an idea of who really Jenna truly is, but really captures Pam. And that's really what got the casting director. So much so that 10 years later, when Jenna, I think, had the book being read by that casting director, she said, "I remember that picture. That was, in our minds, Pam." Now, of course, to some degree, that is luck of the draw. She happened to have the picture, it got in at the right time, blah, 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 blah. But she so perfectly illustrates in her book the pictures that she used before, which did not really capture what the essence of Jenna was, to the point that when you looked at it, you felt like, look, when this woman walks in, I get a good sense of what I'm going to get. Because she shows other pictures that, of course, while were really beautiful or a little zany because they were early in her career, they give you no idea. She makes a great argument, and I would certainly back that up with, you have to understand kind of what it is you're going to be going out for, and then you have to expertly capture it in the best way possible, so that when your agency submits you for those roles, and it shows up as wallpaper for a casting director, and they're looking at those little thumbnails, that picture pops. I believe Jenna's picture would have easily popped off that wallpaper page, if in fact that's how it was seen back then, for the role of Pam, because it just happened to be just right. But it's also not just, oh, well, she took a picture of herself looking like Pam. No, she took a picture of herself, which really shows the predominant essence in Jenna, and it just lined up perfectly. But it wasn't a mystery. A lot of times you look at pictures of people, and while you might, oh, that's cool, that's neat, while you're, you know, the way you're standing by the building and the lighting on your face, but you don't get a sense of who that person really is. This is tricky business. It's not necessarily the most expensive photographer, but I think first you have to get an idea of probably what it is you're marketing as a good CEO, and then try and take a picture which shows that. Now, getting back to the fellow with the 400, tries, or most of which didn't get over the gate, didn't make it, didn't get him in the room. First thing I'd think is, what does your picture look like? Second thing I'd look at is, who is your agency? Because sometimes you can be with agencies that aren't great or agents that aren't great. They have a lot of clients. They have a scattergun approach. They'll throw 20 of their clients that could be possible for a role at the wall, hoping one of them will stick. And while that can work in theory, why not? You know, one of them may stick. What can happen is it kind of dilutes the response you get from casting directors because they know you're just tossing a bunch of people and seeing who sticks, and they're not taking it maybe as seriously as the agent who is very conscientious, and they have a reputation with casting directors of being agents that really, you know, are very smart. They don't waste time. I think this person is perfect for that. I think you're going to be very happy with his choice. They tend to get that kind of reputation, and then what happens is they're taken more seriously, and there are so many factors that get that little thumbnail to pop off the page. All you can continue to do is to try and assess what's going on without taking it personally. This is the trick. It's so hard to navigate this business. If you take things personally all the time, you have to step out of yourself. You have to look at the product. You have to look at the agency, who's representing you, what the picture is that's going out, what the, you know, temperature is of, you know, the industry, where you are, what's happening. You know, get as much information as you can. Try and, you know, ascertain the best way to navigate your product through it. I mean, that's all you can do. And I know it's very frustrating. And I know, you know, TikTok, come on, let's get on. But that's it. And you see, that's why when you do make it in this business, it's so sweet because you've actually gone through this crazy gauntlet that tries to get rid of you. Much like I hear the first year of law school does. You know, they just try and weed you out. Let's see who's not going to get, who doesn't have the stick-to-itiveness and the perseverance. So, picture, agency, go in and have a talk. If it hasn't, you know, I mean, you can't go in every week, but if it's been a month or two and nothing's happened and you go in and you don't take it personally, this is the important thing when you talk to your agents. Just drain yourself of the emotion. Because you see, when people care, you know, about the way they treat their clients and everything, if they see that you are upset, hurt, you know, depressed, it's hard for them not to feel responsible for that. Now, if you can keep that out of it, if you can just go in and say, hey, you know, I've noticed, I'm sure you're probably trying to do your best, but I'm wondering, is there anything I can do? Do we need a better picture? Is it just the way it is? And you do it and it's void of emotion. You see, you're not putting them through having to then own that emotion and then, you know, answer to that emotion, which is what, you know, gets people off center. So the best thing to do is, if you haven't been in a while, go in and chat. You know, you can ask around about your agency's reputation. You can look at your picture and start really thinking about who you are. Discuss this with your agent. You just have to continue to look at yourself like you're your own CEO and try and make smart, level-headed decisions about how you can make progress. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, part of the equation might be you just need to be patient a little and study, improve your skills. You know, in the meantime, you're creating your own stuff. You're doing your own thing. You know, we try and do all of these things at once. That way we never feel like we're, even though we're being patient, we never feel like we're wasting our time and just sitting on our hands. So, you know, we get something from everything, but this is part of what makes it frustrating, being in this business, part of which seems so out of our own control, and most of it is, let's face it. But those things that are in our control, we want to be in control of. And so start going through it systematically. Now, if finally you're left with, you know what, I think I may just want to go get another agent. Well, you know, I've told you, don't take things personally. And so it's just business. And if you feel that what you need to do is move on, then you're just making a business decision. And that's how it is. But before I made that decision, I would maybe go have another talk with the agent because it apparently when you had that first talk, it led to an audition, which got you a job. So sometimes it is about reminding the agent that you're there. I know that when I had my theater or my TV series, you just can't remember all the great, talented friends you have. And then sometimes someone would say, well, how about so-and-so? You go, of course, you know. So it's hard, you know, in our world, us looking out, of course, that's all we're thinking about is our product. But you have to remember that when other people have lots of product, it's hard to think about everyone and to remember everything and always be on top of every little thing. It's hard. You don't want to be the squeaky wheel, but not the squeaky wheel that's got that really shrill, high squeak, and it's really a nuisance because it's like constant squeak. Gentle reminders, finding out where you're at, being a conscientious, artist who's, you know, as interested in their career as they should be, but not to the point they become annoying. You find that balance, you find that equilibrium, you don't take it personally, and you just keep plotting what you're going to do next, what stuff you're working on your own, being on top of your career, trying not to be someone that gets depressed by it and, you know, feels overwhelmed by it, but you're always just thinking, okay, these are the cards I have in my hand. How am I going to play them? What can I do next? And that alone, that attitude alone can alleviate a lot of this frustration. I know for myself, when I feel like I'm doing everything I can, well, that's it. That's, I guess, the speed at which the game is being played then, and I'll deal. But if I'm not taking some kind of positive action, oh, that's when it becomes very overwhelming for me. The wait times, you know, the queue that I'm standing in, it feels like, you know, all of that stuff. So, Jonathan, I think all in what I just said, hopefully you'll be able to extract a couple of good answers there. Be your own CEO, make some decisions, live with the decisions you're making. If you're going to make a decision about something, make sure that you've thought it thoroughly through and then pull the trigger. That's it. It's business. It's not personal. The third question comes from someone whose name I can't remember. And I apologize. Hopefully when you hear this, you'll know who it is. Normally I have a mind like I forget. But at any rate, I know that this question came from a fellow in Florida, and he was actually speaking to the podcast that I did about, what we wear when we go into an audition. And he heard me say on the podcast, you know, generally when it says in the script, he wears a tight black t-shirt. She wears a red dress. That my sense is, generally, and this is what I do with in my coachings, is to say, don't do that because you don't want to look like all the other lemmings in the room. And the point you made was, well, listen, I've gone into rooms and the casting director said, hey, I told you to wear a black shirt. Why aren't you wearing your black shirt or whatever? Well, here's the difference. You're addressing something else completely. I never said if a casting director says, please dress blah, 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 that you shouldn't do that. No, of course you should. Why? Because the casting director put it in a note and said, do this. That is completely different from the author's note in a script that says she sweeps into the room in a red dress. No one has given you a directive to wear the red dress. This was a description in the script. What you're talking about is when the casting notice says, please, blah, blah, blah. No, you got to do it. Of course you do, because they asked you to. And if you can't follow this simple direction, then, you know, what's wrong with you? It doesn't happen a lot, you know. Generally, it's the casting director giving a note, please don't do this, please don't. The whatever, they'll have, you know, things, or they'll say these days, one of the things that's popular is, please, no acting, please, no acting. The director doesn't like any acting. Keep it real. You know, what they're basically telling you is, you know, don't be a bad actor. But they do say things like, please, well, like bring a swimsuit sometimes. generally more for, of course, commercials and things. But, you know, sometimes in shows, they need to see what the guy's body, the girl's body's like. So they'll say, you know, please wear leotards. Please wear a very form-fitting, you know, outfit. Please wear, you know, come in all black. You know, they'll say things like that, obviously. And then you need to do it. I mean, do you positively have to? Well, no. I mean, it's a free country, but they have asked you to. And if you don't, that's not good. I would expect you to, especially if I had my casting director put it out in big letters. Sometimes those things say things like, please be off book. Don't hold the script. Please bring a picture and resume. This all falls into the same category. The person whose casting office you're going into is making a request. It would be improper not to fill it. And if you don't, then you have a good excuse, I guess. Like, I just came from the airport. I didn't have a time to buy a red dress or, you know, whatever. But, oh, my goodness, yes, so absolutely. So, listen, my Floridian friend, yes, absolutely, you have to do what it says there. No, no, no. My comment has to do with in the script, like when it says, he laughs maniacally. He scratches his chin while looking down at his purple shirt. We don't need to scratch our chin, and we don't need to look down at our purple shirt. Can you do those two things? Hey, do whatever you want. Of course. Absolutely. I'm just telling you, having watched some 10,000 auditions, I know it becomes annoying when people all come in wearing the same purple shirt, looking down and scratching their chin at the same time. Why does it become annoying? Because once you've seen one person do it, you kind of feel, I don't know, and then you see three in a row, you just, it's weird. You start to wait for the person, the black sheep, who just won't do everything and they'll do it their own way, because we also know instantly that that person isn't necessarily going to be wearing a purple shirt, nor will they scratch their chin. Because so many things change, and directors say, yeah, let's not worry about the chin scratching. I got other things I want to do here. Yeah, so we just want to see your interpretation, you know. So you can do it, but I'd say, hey, if you don't feel like it, or if you don't have a purple shirt, or if you feel like, you know, I don't want to wear purple, and I'm even telling you I think it's a better idea if you don't, you might want to try that. That's just based on my 38 years of experience, but that's what I think. But the other stuff, oh, yes, Florida friend. Yes, follow it. They wrote it there for a reason. Absolutely. Just like, as I mentioned, I know there's a casting office that I've gone into where it's frequent for them to say, please be off book. Well, please be off book means please be off book. And if you're not off book, they're going to go, oh, look, we even asked please, and he's not. And will that weigh in their decision? It could. And what do we want to do as actors? Scratch off all the things, take all the things off the list that might, you know, impinge on our chance to get the part. So there you go. And that's my answer for you there. All right. Okay, now my fourth and final question has to do with reviews and the etiquette of posting reviews, you know, backstage, perhaps if you're, you know, pretty much if you're in a play, because obviously if you're in a movie and get a review, well, no one's living together. I mean, we're not all together in the same room necessarily. Whereas, of course, in theater, reviews many times get posted backstage, they're discussed. And the question really was, what is the etiquette there? And I think it is really addressing the idea, of course, what if some people aren't treated as well in the review as others, or what if the review's a real stinker? Yeah. Well, look, here's the deal. First of all, we have to remember that reviews are one person's opinion. And that's just part of the job, man. You know, that's just what happens. You do your work, you put it out there, and people are going to say stuff. And I have, you know, certainly in my career, and mostly in my career as a theater owner, operator, director, I've had my share. You know, I was in L.A. They had the largest metropolitan paper in the nation. They have many, many papers that reviewed you, many, many different publications. I mean, my goodness, for each show, I'm sure there was at least, oh, I don't know, a dozen at least of different publications, maybe more, up to 20 with radio that would come and show. So you take that, then you multiply it to the, every production. You go through a lot of this stuff. I found that there are some writers that are incredibly intelligent. And I think in their heart, they actually do want to promote theater. You know, they want to, at all costs, try and lift it up. And at the same time, they need to be incredibly honest about what they're saying and their appraisal. And, you know, they try and do the absolute right thing. Hey, if they don't like it, they tell you why they didn't. And you know, from where they're sitting, even though you may disagree, you know, they make sense of their point. There are other writers who, I don't know how they got their job. They don't seem particularly intelligent or intuitive. You know, how do these people work up the ranks? Some of them in the most insane ways or odd ways. They suddenly now are the writer, the feature reviewer. Usually not for the big publications, but for enough to put print out, you know, and get some ink out there. We love them and hold them up high when they're fabulous, and we, of course, say, oh, this is a junk paper, who cares when they're not? But they're there. There are some writers that write really because the truth is most people like to read bad reviews. You know, it is a thing. You know, you start to read a review and it's excellent. And most people, well, it's great. Okay, that thing's good. Especially if you're in the business, you know, you're reading somebody else getting such high praise. It's like, oh, good for you. And you move on. But start to read something and say, oh, ho, ho, these people definitely, he tripped up this time. You know, people tend to get sucked right into those things. Now, if you're being honest with yourself, you'll admit what I just said is true. And so you can see what the lure of the writer who wants to write that kind of review is. You can see why. Why? They get more eyeballs. They become the dastardly person who really has a sharp tongue and they really know how to, you know, expertly and intelligently tear you to bits. And those kinds of reviews are fun. They're fun to read. I hate to say it. But you know, that's what gets eyeballs, and then that makes that writer more popular. And, you know, we're all generally, if we're in business, we're into advancement. And that's how it all works. More people talk about the stuff you wrote. And so what I'm saying is it's not something that has to be based on fairness or correctness or rightness or what's trueness. Not at all. So what does that mean? Well, that means you're in a business where that happens. That means that you're a product where that kind of stuff can happen too. That's the deal. There's nothing you can do about it. And, you know, I've seen incredible work get smashed, and I've seen the worst stuff I've ever seen, you know, be made out to be heroes. So what? You can't care about that stuff. You just have to do your work. You just have to put your head down and do your work. And so what is the etiquette? Well, one could say, what about posting the review backstage? Well, yeah, sure. I don't know. I think the actor, it's incumbent on the actor to decide how they're going to navigate through these moments. Because whether you post it up on a board or whether I know it's out there and I can go to the newsstand and get it or go online or whatever, you know, it's a Pandora's box. If I want to look into it, I'll look into it. And if I don't, I won't. So if it's sitting on a wall and I want to read it, I'll read it. Just because you're saying, well, I put it up there, is that, you know, and it's lousy, or, you know, Jim gets just eviscerated. You know, should I put it up there? Because the rest of the cast, you know, they, whatever, and it's good news for them. I mean, what do we do? Oh, come on, man. Here's what I think. Nothing. What are you going to do about it? Here's where I draw the line. If someone is really eviscerated in the cast or some aspect of it. That you don't need to bring it up. Why? Well, because we're all human, man. You know, we all have hearts that can get broken. You know, people give actors such a hard time about being sensitive. I certainly know I've been given a hard time about being sensitive. And I think to myself, yes, but it's that exact sensitivity that perhaps leads me to any kind of skills I have. So I don't think you can say, hey, good on you for your skills, but no, don't be so sensitive. I'm sorry, I'm a sensitive flower. That's how it works. That's how I'm open. Now, I try and temper that with just getting on through life and not, you know, bawling about everything that happens. But we're still sensitive. That's the nature of being this type of artist, maybe any kind of artist. And so you can answer your own question. If we want the show to go well, we just have to weigh the factors out. Posting something up, I don't know if it's a big deal. I think the bad part is whispering into that person's ear, boy, you really suck. That's what he said before the guy goes on stage, right? Why? Well, you're just undermining your own show. I don't care how much you hate that chap. Well, that's not going to do you any good. I think it's about positivity, you know? When the run's over, then whatever. But while we're still kind of creating and making the product, well, I think we need to do everything we can to make sure that we're doing the best we can to ensure that happens. Now, if the question is, well, is there something in a review that sometimes, you know, we should take the advice of? Maybe it's good advice. Has that ever happened? Absolutely. Absolutely, of course. There are reviewers that know what they're talking about, and they will say things that maybe draws interesting attention to something, you know, like they are able to give it very smart words that most civilians couldn't, but since they've been trained, they've seen lots of plays, maybe they actually have a wonderful reputation. If they said something that might hurt, but if you looked at it, there was some really good, usable information there, should we heed it? Should we listen to it? Collectively, as a group, with a director, you know, we look at something and does it make sense and maybe perhaps change the course? Well, yes. Step outside again as a CEO. Take a look at the material. Weigh it out. Decide. Is this good stuff? Is it bad stuff? Let's get rid of the bad. Let's look at the good. Is there any good? Well, do you want to incorporate it into our show? Can we make it better? These people are in the business of looking at shows and giving their appraisals. Maybe they have something good to say that we can use. Absolutely. But just to the idea, the idea of etiquette, backstage, discussing reviews, this and that. Listen, our show, our product is always number one. So we want to leave the cattiness for when the thing is done. But we never, ever want to saw away at the legs of the table that we're sitting on in any way. Never. We never want to hurt that. We want to do everything we can to help it. And in fact, then, if somebody were eviscerated in a review, I think it would be important to everyone in the cast to go up to say, forget that stuff, you're great, whatever. Do whatever. You want to make the thing as great as you can. And as to the individual perhaps getting the bad review, the good review, let's talk about the bad review. Listen, this is all part of the test, man. You've got to be able to take that stuff and, you know, not just roll with the punches, but do cartwheels with the punches. If there's something in there that's good that you can take from it, you do that, you throw away the rest. This is all the Green Beret training that you go through in your career, because people are going to say whatever. And that's just going to be part of what happens to you. You know, I have a good friend in the business. He tells me sometimes people walk up to him on the street and say, hey, I didn't like that last thing you did. That was not that good. You know, I mean, you know, just on a sidewalk. We have to become these people that just know how to process that information. That just let it go through you, take the good stuff, discard the rest. Look at everything as a test. Let me see how well I can handle this. Surprise all your friends and family by the spring in your step and the fact that you're going to keep on keeping on, because this kind of stuff is not going to dissuade you from your mission. And that is to get on in this business and improve and get better, more work, become a working actor, which I assume is the goal. All right? So listen, please ask me any questions. I love hearing from you, and it gives us good stuff we can discuss, ideas for podcasts, just like the last one I did about, you know, Beginner's Guide. That was inspired by one of the listeners, and certainly these four questions. Also, I have another podcast coming up. I did one with the incredible Stephen Pressfield, who wrote The War of Art, Gates of Fire, Turning Pro. I think you're going to get a big kick out of it. He is a wonderful person to interview. So anyway, we have Jenna Fisher coming up and Stephen Pressfield. Also, I'm going to be setting up a system of Skyping now because I get a lot of requests. Obviously, there are people around the world that aren't going to necessarily make it out to where I am, or I won't make it out to them. So I'm going to set up a little bit of online training where we can spend time together, discuss anything, whether it's acting training or anything personal that's going on in the business, any kind of advice. I can help you with your agents. We can discuss anything you need to if you want the advice of someone like me who has done what I've done. So there you have it. But you can always reach me at jeff@reallifeactor.com. Thanks for listening. You have been listening to a Real Life Actor podcast. This is Jeff Seymour. Please remember to follow us on Podomatic or subscribe on iTunes. If you want to know anything else about the Real Life Actor approach, you can always go to reallifeactor.com. Thanks for listening.